C2A. Number 21B.
Line 4. They no longer measure men by material sense. So they never measured anymore somebody with what they have been seeing with their eyes and hearing with their ears after gaining the true idea. Can you see? Now they got the true idea. Again, at the point of soul, everything crystallizes and identifies itself. Suddenly, Mrs. Eddy speaks here that they gained the true idea of their glorified master. And then they became better healers, leaning no longer on matter. Can you see the tone of spirit? But on the divine principle of their work. The influx of light was sudden. That's what we all wish that would happen, that the influx of light would be sudden and the whole light breaks in unto us, and then we have in one go, we have everything. That's what we would like to have. The influx of light was sudden. Was it so sudden? It was only sudden when it was ripe. They were going around with Jesus for years, so it wasn't as sudden as that. But when it happens, she wants to say, then really something happens. Like with Paul on the way to Damascus, it happened suddenly, but he had given a lot of thought to what Christianity is before. Even if he has not understood it, he was a real go-getter. He was really in earnest. He was fighting for his religion of the Old Testament, and he was engaged in the idea. That he couldn't see the idea, well, that's what happens only too often, but suddenly he could see it. So suddenly a soul can be turned into a pole, suddenly. I have seen that also. One of the nicest things that just comes into my mind is that about 30 years ago, I was giving a summer school in Switzerland. And one of the students came up to my room during the breaks and came in and stood before me and said to me, "I hate you. I hate you. I don't know why, but I hate you." And went out and I didn't see her anymore. Today, she's that one who studies the textbook and the structure of the textbook as nobody else in Zurich. The soul was turned into a pole. It just didn't make any impression on me that when she said, "I hate you," it was at the time when I was presenting the first four chapters in the textbook. And it aroused the hate against the truth so much that poor thing had even the courage, which I admired very much, to stand before me and just say in the middle of the summer school, "I hate you." It didn't make much impression because one knew at that time already quite enough that it was hate against the idea, and that it just needs that hate of a soul that was trying to kill really the Christ idea, that was, I guess, also present when Stephen was stoned, and he had a jolly good time to see that the Christian was stoned. See, all that didn't matter. He was in earnest, and that mattered. And somebody who is in earnest can be turned in a twinkle of an eye, I think you say, suddenly, and can see the light. So the real enemies that are really in earnest are really good enemies, really good ones. They really mean everything in earnesty. And that I have experienced not very often, but quite a few times in my life, that somebody would just come up and be all against me, and after a while I could see that they were the best workers in the field. So, hope against hope. Yes. So here we had the last little tone now of the days of Pentecost. You see, the days of Pentecost was like what the soul experienced on the way of Damascus, that sudden influx of divine signs, and where all were really stirred by the Holy Ghost, and they were speaking one language and understood everyone the other. That's not English. I know when it is not English, but I don't know the fact about it. Yeah, they understood each other. I know it just the same. Yeah. I marvel how you can stand to listen to this Swiss English for hours and hours. It must be sometimes very hard to know what I want to express. Yes. That brings us to a further main tone. Namely, we come now to the subtone of soul. Love as truth as soul. And you will feel at once the change of subject. See, we always should say, can I see that the subject changes? What did we have in mind here truth, love as truth as mind. It was all about beginning to perceive the true idea, the walk of Jesus to Emmaus, and seeing the idea instead of seeing Jesus. That was the seeing of mind. Then at the second tone, the scenery is changed, and Mrs. Eddy was presenting really the working out of matter into spirit, in three paragraphs. The first paragraph about the probation after the resurrection, then the ascension, and then the Holy Ghost, which is universal. So that's the working out of matter into pure spirit. Now we come to soul, and the whole scenery changes again. Soul that had to handle animal magnetism, and malicious handle magnetism, or ignorant animal magnetism, and she brings in the Judas period. So all is about the betrayal through Judas. Soul handles malicious animal magnetism because soul is sinless, and because soul cannot be touched, because soul is unchangeable. And nothing can change the true identity of man. This is brought out through five subtones, as the third day of creation is also laid out. You see at once, as a side note, the traitor's conspiracy, and we get at once that sense of the opposite of soul. Judas conspired against Jesus. So we have the conspiracy, the hidden conspiracy that always goes on in animal magnetism. It's usually hidden and not open. So the world's ingratitude and hatred toward that just man affected his betrayal. We have all about conspiration, betrayal, the traitor's price was 30 pieces of silver and the smile of the Pharisees. So you have conspiracy, you have betrayal, you have the traitor. He chose his time when the people were in doubt concerning Jesus' teaching. That's mine. When they were in doubt, when they were not clear about it. And there was no clarity about it when the people didn't know really what is right, what is true. It always comes in at that point where the human mind wavers and says, after all, is he on the right track or is he not on the right track? And that was the point when Jesus was captured and put before Pilate. Then the time was ripe for conspiracy and for betraying when the people are not knowing what is the right thing. And that happens so often, naturally, in any religion, that one is in doubt. Is this really the Messiah? Is it not the Messiah? And so one has to have a sense of mind. We come to spirit. A period was approaching which would reveal the infinite distance between Judas and his master. Now you get spirit, can you see the distance between? Now there came the separation, the gulf between two opposites. And so that was the cause of the Judas betrayal. Judas Iscariot knew this. He could feel that his spirituality was not the same as that of Jesus, that there was a big gulf between the both, and he could see that distance. And you know, that always happens. It's spiritual jealousy is always much bigger, much stronger than material jealousy. Being jealous of another person's money and rich material riches is child's play against when one loves the spiritual and sees one doesn't have it and the other has it. That always is a heavy thing. And that's something that lingers practically in every body, in every student, and one has to watch that one is not jealous of another student's spiritual growth and spiritual understanding. And Jesus knew that there was a great gulf between him and the spirituality of Jesus. He knew that the great goodness of that master placed a great gulf between Jesus and his betrayer. Again, you have the gulf between them, the great distance between them, spirit. And this spiritual distance inflamed Judas' envy. Envy and jealousy comes in. You know, that jealousy, that spiritual jealousy, is actually pointing to something very good. I always feel this is something terrific. It shows that the student would love to get the spiritual, or he wouldn't be jealous. If he wouldn't be jealous, he would say, oh, you with your spiritual highfalutin thoughts and esoteric magic and so on, oh, get away, that's nothing, you know, just would throw it off. But if one loves the spiritual and feels the other one has more of that, that really does that, what she says, that distance really rises up, jealousy. And so in a way, one should see it in a proper light and say, he wants it, he wants the spiritual. Yeah? And that's a good thing. And one time, he will get it. Huh? He will get it. Yeah. The greed for gold strengthened his ingratitude. We have again the greed for material things. That strengthens his ingratitude. We know gratitude is an idea of spirit. And for a time quieted his remorse. He knew that the world generally loves a lie better than truth. He was right. Huh? That's true. And so he plotted the betrayal. Can you see a soul, the counterfeit of soul, plotting a betrayal of Jesus in order to raise himself in popular estimation? His dark plot fell to the ground, and the traitor fell with it. This is a good sense, really, of what is that raises the traitor. What is behind a traitor? Behind a traitor is his too great a love for the material, and yet would like to have the spiritual. The disciples' desertion of their master in his last earthly struggle was punished. Each one came to a violent death, except St. John, of whose death we have no record. What does she say here? She says here that what is that which generates envy? What is that which generates betrayal? It's always that there is not enough spirituality there to be at one with its ideal. That there is too much diversion in one's consciousness, on one side the love of gold, the love of matter, of material things, and on the other side the love for the spiritual, which is innate, so to say, in everyone. Everyone fundamentally, even if he doesn't know it, he longs for the spiritual. He longs for heaven. He doesn't know quite what heaven is and how it looks like, but there is in man, or he wouldn't be man, there is there a remnant, a love for the spiritual. And that struggle between that materialistic sense of being drawn towards the materialistic sense of things, and on the other side, the longing for the spiritual, brings a gulf, and that gulf really can show itself as maliciousness, as betraying, and so on. But the point that is brought out here also is that the traitor falls by its own weight. That we don't have to do anything, it falls by its own weight. I always think back, naturally, these things were predominant in Mr. Dawley's time, that constant betrayal around him, that his best friends betrayed him, the nearest friends, those friends that were nearest to him betrayed him. It was awful. You know, we went all through that. So that were always a kind of conspiracy somehow in the field that was so much because such a terrific, great spiritual idea was born and all those students could somehow feel it. Most of them could not really interpret it rightly, just as we have seen before. They could not interpret it rightly at that time. And so that gives always quite a turmoil in the field. But John Dawley would always say, well, science purifies itself. That is what is big. He said, you know, people don't matter. Organization does not matter. All that matters is the idea. That was his repeated answer. That he would say, because he had to struggle through that betrayal, naturally also, he had to find an answer, and he would see always that the traitor would fall by its own weight. It destroys itself. So if one is surrounded, and naturally one is surrounded, if one is pushing forward into a new field, that students will betray oneself. One always has to be aware of that suddenly out of the blue they turn against you, quite unexpected, from one second to the other, some devil gets into them and try to be a traitor. They fall by their own weight. The tragedy is that they fall in a tragic way. That's the tragic of it. I've seen them falling by their own weight, but in a tragic way. I've only seen one around me who was against me that did not fall by its own way, had that motherhood sense for the idea, and said the idea must be saved. And when that student began to see that, suddenly, they could see what I am standing for. Suddenly. What they didn't see before. But that was only one case of many that shared really the destiny of a Judas. And that's not easy. Judas did hang himself on a tree. He didn't have to be hanged. He hanged himself. John Dolly always said, just give error enough rope to hang itself. Let it just happen. Always said, think of what Jesus said to Judas at the Last Supper, and what thou wilt do, go and do it quickly. He didn't say, but for heaven's sake, Judas, don't do that. You know, the end of you will be terrible. Don't do that, please, Judas. Be good boy. Don't do that. He said, no, what I will do, go do it and do it quickly. Let's get it over. And so he actually bought a long enough rope to hang himself. And that is something that one forgets quite a bit, what enormous mental and spiritual struggle goes on in a field when a new idea is being born and a new idea wants to break through. I once took out of a book, I don't know which book it was, well, it must be a book on the Bible, where they say what happened with the disciples, because Mrs. Eddy has said here, in that paragraph from 27 to 30, that the disciples' desertion of their master in his last earthly struggle was punished. Each one came to a violent death except St. John, of whose death we have no record. And this is how it is recorded in history, what happened with the disciples who deserted him, who played the Judas. We note that through their instigation, all the early disciples suffered martyrdom. John the Baptist was beheaded. Stephen was stoned to death. James, the son of Zebedee, was beheaded. Philip was scourged and thrown into prison, then later crucified. Matthew was slain with a halberd. Halberd. Do you know a halberd? You know, as they fought earlier time. James, the author of the epistle, at the age of 94, was beaten, stoned, and finally his brains were dashed out with a fuller's brush. Matthias was stoned and beheaded. Andrew, Peter's brother, was crucified. Mark was dragged to pieces by the people of Alexandria. Peter was crucified upside down. Paul was beheaded. Jude was crucified. Bartholomew was beaten and then crucified. Thomas was thrust through with a spear. Luke was hanged in Greece on an olive tree. Simon was crucified. What a story. What a story. I like that story. I don't like them to be crucified head down and things like that. I like the spiritual story of it. I like the spiritual story about Mrs. Eddy said, that she just puts down a law. The law of soul and spirit. It's very easy. She's presenting laws of life, of being, our being, which says, now you like to work out your life in science, so here are the danger signs. I show you the danger signs. He says, the danger signs are in soul, that we may be turned the other way around, that we are turned into a chooser, that we are a disciple that is turned into a chooser. Soul does the very other thing, that it turns the sinner into a saint. But animal magnetism tries to turn the saint into a sinner, into a Judas, and that's a law in being. a general law, let's say that way. That's not something that happens to somebody who was called Judas and lived 2,000 years ago and he was a bad guy. No, these are laws working within ourselves. Within ourselves, we all have a Judas. Each one of us has a Judas. And that Judas is depicted here and saying, it's that great gulf between what we understand spiritually and what we see we could understand on a higher degree spiritually, and that distance, how to get that, can turn us into a Judas. See? And it's amazing how they can turn into a Judas. How suddenly somebody who has been your co-worker and has been working with you suddenly turns from one moment to the other into a Judas and says, I have written your books. You have already signed them. How can you? Somebody say that? When I wrote the books, when that co-worker was not only with me. It's awful. But that co-worker was somebody who really had a deep spiritual sense, but just could not master pride. And so, one after the other, I could see that one has to be careful that the Judas in oneself does not get the upper hand. And how doesn't it get the upper hand? Just by keeping constantly soul and spirit in view that says, all that matters is the idea. All that matters is the idea. All that matters is the idea. People don't matter. Organization doesn't matter. All that matters is the idea. And stick to that straight line of spirit, then one is safe. So, then one uses the law of soul as spirit in which one is safe. So these are laws, but they also show that we cannot play with science. That if at the crucial moment we desert the idea, like Judas and the disciples have done, that is not child's play. That is not just desertion. That is deserting the idea. Deserting people doesn't matter. If you break your friendship with somebody, well, what's that? Life goes on just the same. But deserting the idea is a terrible thing. And one should be aware of it in order not to fall into the trap of it. Yes. That's how far the tone goes of soul as mind and spirit. And we'll do the rest this afternoon.